NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So, bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist Julian Baker aus Memphis und sie kommt gleich zu Wort. Aber erstmal Musik von ihrem neuen Album, Turn Out the Lights. Hier ist jetzt Sour Breath. Und das war Sour Breath von dem neuen Album von Julian Baker, Turn Out the Lights. Und sie ist bei mir im Studio. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
Glad you can make it.
Yeah, I'm glad I can make
it. And you're not too worn out by all the traveling. I've already heard about your 15-hour trek from Paris to Berlin.
It's bizarre. I think we were awake for so long that we just got through feeling tired and reached the nether plane of second wind and now are okay. We're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're here in Hamburg to introduce us to your second album. But of course, there was a first album, which not all that many people knew about here because it wasn't conventionally released over here. And so did it actually take you by surprise, the level of attention you got in the States about that album?
Yes.
It did. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't. When I released the record initially, it was just using the website Bandcamp, which, you know, I had used to release records from my previous band, and everyone we knew, like, when you don't have access to a label or streaming or anything, you just release it for free on the internet. But then when it got picked up by a label and re-released, it gained more attention than I had ever anticipated it having. So it's interesting. Yeah.
And is your perception of that record different now in hindsight to what it was at the time when you were doing it? And how do you view it yourself now?
Sprained ankle?
Yeah, I mean, did it seem like it was like just a period of you finding your feet, or do you think it was like a properly mature piece of work, or how do you perceive it yourself?
Well, so as far as what you're saying about do I think it was me finding my feet or if it was a mature record, I would be hesitant to call probably anything I'll ever do a mature record because I don't know that there is one definitive goal or a most ultimate iteration of a musical style, right? Hopefully, I guess as a musician, I continue to change and I never reach a point where I have, I guess, distilled all of the music down into a caricature of itself. And so I think Sprained Ankle probably wasn't mature in any sense because I was just writing things with minimal revision or editing. But that also was an interesting experiment because removed from the context of a band and stripped of all the, I guess, embellishments of a full band, it produced a lot more raw of a product. And that's something that contributed to, I guess, finding the musical style that I feel I work best within. You know, for this record, I still wanted to preserve that immediacy and rawness and try to limit the editing process for that reason.
Okay. Das erste Album, Sprained Ankle, erschien vor ein paar Jahren. Und nicht so viele Leute in Deutschland kennen das Album. Es wurde ursprünglich auf ihrer Bandcamp-Website veröffentlicht, auf ihrer Seite. Und sie hat nicht damit gerechnet, dass es jemals richtig veröffentlicht werden würde. Aber das ist in Amerika geschehen. Und es war dementsprechend überraschend. Und im Nachhinein weiß sie, dass es natürlich so ihre ersten Schritte widerspiegelt, dass es nicht so ein reifes Werk war und dass sie dabei war, zu wachsen als Künstlerin und einfach ein bisschen Selbstbewusstsein zu finden und einfach Fuß zu fassen. Und so gesehen war es durchaus ein gelungenes Projekt. Aber sie meint wiederum, sie glaubt nie, dass sie das Wort reif verwenden wird im Zusammenhang mit ihrer Arbeit, weil sie glaubt, dass sie sich immer verändern möchte und sie möchte sich immer künstlerisch erneuern. Und sie denkt, was wichtig war, was das erste Album betrifft, ist, dass es alles ziemlich so minimalistisch war. Es war wirklich nur sie mit einer Gitarre und ohne eine Begleitband. Und es war dementsprechend sehr so ehrlich und sparsam und sehr bodenständig. Und auch natürlich ein bisschen rau und ungeschliffen. Und sie wollte zwar nicht so künstlerisch stehen bleiben, aber es hat ihr trotzdem einen Eindruck für sich selbst gegeben, also wie sie sich dann entwickeln wollte. Und das neue Album ist dann zwar anders, aber so der Kern von ihr, von Julian Baker, ist im Prinzip erhalten geblieben. So I think it would make sense to hear a track from that album before we go any further.
Sure.
Just give people an impression if they don't know the album.
Yeah,
I thought of Something. Is that okay?
Yeah.
One of my favorite tracks on the album?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Now we get Something von diesem besagten Debütalbum von 2015. Von dem Album Sprained Ankle, here's Julian Baker. So das war Something von Julian Baker von ihrem Debütalbum vor 2 Jahren, Sprained Ankle, das heißt verstaute Knöchel. I've just translated what sprained ankle means.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, there's lots of metaphors in your work anyway. I mean, it's obviously all deeply personal. And you could actually get the impression, if you listen to the first album compared to the second, that maybe the first album is even more intensely personal.
Mm.
But I think really there's not much in it, because it's just there's obviously more instruments, more arrangements on the second album. When it comes down to your intense personal style, that has stayed, hasn't it, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think the difference in the lyrical content, or I guess the poetry of the second record as compared with the first record, is that I tried to take the stories I was telling and just be a little bit more discerning in what I was trying to communicate. Because I think the first record and the second record, they're both honest admissions of how I was feeling at the time, or an experience in my life, or an anecdote of something that happened to me. But all of the themes, I guess, on Sprained Ankle are latent, right? They're things that I was not even done discovering about myself when I wrote the songs. I just wrote them to exercise an emotion. But now that I had this chance to craft a record with a little bit more deliberation, I tried to think, well, I'm making these honest admissions in the songs, and what am I attempting to illustrate with them? And so then after, you know, like I was telling you about writing drafts and voice memos on my phone, so like after I listen back to that, I can ask myself, what is the, I guess, the subconscious implication? Like, here's this anecdote. I'm admitting a story about not wearing a seatbelt in a car. Or I'm admitting a story about, you know, something else on the second record. But what is the thesis underneath that? And I think it seems a little bit more purposeful, you know? But I hope that that doesn't translate to seeming artificial, you know?
You said it does sound artificial.
Okay, man. Okay. Because I know it's a little bit more, or maybe that's not the word I was looking for, but like convoluted, you know?
Yeah.
Because I would have more time to workshop it as if it were a poem. And sometimes
I think your word sound too worked out.
Too worked out.
Too much meticulous detail and not
exactly.
Enough spontaneity.
Exactly, yeah, almost too detailed. Like not as, you know, raw or unrefined as the previous record. Because I have this proclivity to, when I'm writing especially, you know, being articulate is important to me. But articulate and concise almost never happen together for me, because okay. I want to go to the trouble of making sure people know exactly what I mean. And I become a very wordy individual.
And that takes time then.
It takes time. Yeah, it takes time to verify. Yeah.
Okay. Ja, sie meint, dass die beiden Platten natürlich viele Gemeinsamkeiten haben, aber es gibt auch viele Unterschiede. Die Gemeinsamkeit ist eben, dass sie eine sehr, sehr intensive persönliche Herangehensweise hat, dass die Texte großen Wert auf so ein authentisches so Feeling legen und dass sie sehr ehrlich sind und dass sie gerne ihr Innerstes nach außen kehrt. Und daran hat sich nichts geändert, aber sie glaubt, dass trotzdem kommt das neue Album anders rüber, dass die Texte schon anders fundierter vermittelt werden. Sie glaubt, dass sie einfach sich mehr Gedanken darüber gemacht hat, also was sie wirklich sagen will, dass sie nicht so vage sind. Also beide Platten sind genauso ehrlich wie einander, nur sie glaubt, dass sie sich jetzt besser artikulieren kann. Und sie meinte, sie hat jetzt schon sich Sorgen gemacht, dass es vielleicht künstlich rüberkommen könnte, dass es zu detailliert wird oder zu konstruiert wirkt und dass es irgendwie an Spontanität vielleicht verloren hätte. Aber sie glaubt dann doch nicht. Aber sie meinte, es ist grundsätzlich ein Problem von ihr. Sie legt großen Wert drauf, sich sehr so eloquent und artikuliert auszudrücken. Aber es ist natürlich schwierig, dann kurz und bündig zu sein und irgendwas auf den Punkt zu bringen. Das dauert seine Zeit. Und das war ihre große Sorge. So you think you managed to sidestep that. You haven't got too long-winded. You think you did actually manage to pull the brakes when it was necessary, ultimately.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Okay.
I suppose that's subjective.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So we're going to hear another track now, Appointments, which is the track which kind of gained immediate attention. It was the first single, wasn't it?
Right,
and
right.
Certainly probably one of your most important compositions. I mean, would you regard it as being one of your most important compositions? Do you not think of your material in terms of merit in that respect?
I don't usually think of songs as more or less important. I think I have an individual relationship with each of them. You know, it's hard to pick which one is more or less important than the other because they all function the way that they need to tell the story, right? Like the style, hopefully, or like I try to be mindful of this, like the style fits what you're trying to communicate. So for a song like Appointments, it's maybe one of the more complex or lush arrangements. It's got, it's preceded by a kind of string and woodwind overture, and then it goes straight into some of the most ambitious vocals on the record. But then there's also a song like Even, which is on the record, and it's just the demo of a $50 guitar, and it's very simple. But I don't think, you know, maybe those demonstrate
not necessarily less important,
yeah. Or, you know, in different ways or of showcasing the song, perhaps.
It's interesting that you've got woodwind as well. It's not all that common sort of in sort of indie music to have wood. You know, it's kind of what made you make these choices for the arrangements? Is it something which you deliberately did, or did it just happen to turn out that way, or one of your best friends just plays woodwind? Or
actually, so I'm friends with Cameron Boucher from a band called Sorority Noise in the United States. He's one of my very, very good friends. And he plays woodwinds and clarinet. And interestingly, I knew, though, that I wanted to have strings on the record because I wanted to experiment with new instrumentation and adding things that I thought could be subtle and beautiful. But I had wanted to put some sort of deep woodwind on the record as well because I knew it's an interesting sound. I remember I played a house show with this band that was like an acoustic guitar, a banjo, and a young woman playing tuba. And I saw this woman playing tuba at a house show, and it was gorgeous. It was muted with some sort of object in the horn. Mm. And it sounded almost like a bowed upright bass. But I thought, what an ingenious way to use a tuba. And, you know, then I started listening to other artists who incorporated orchestral arrangements. Not that I hadn't listened to before, but just, you know, with a more discerning ear of how to construct arrangements, like Sufjan Stevens or a Keaton Henson. And these are people that have interesting arrangements as well, including, you know, maybe clarinets or... I feel like there's a bassoon on the Keaton Henson record, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong. It could be a bass.
Okay. Ja, wir hören gleich das Stück Appointments von dem Album. Und ich machte die Bemerkung, dass es ein wichtiges Lied ist. Das ist einer ihrer wichtigsten Songs überhaupt. Und sie hat mir ein bisschen widersprochen. Sie meinte, für sie gibt es kein Lied, das wichtiger ist als ein anderes. Sie sind alle gleichermaßen wichtig auf unterschiedliche Weise. Und sie sind natürlich unterschiedliche Songs. Appointments, meinte, ist schon vielleicht besonders interessant, weil die Arrangements besonders komplex sind und also so sehr saftig arrangiert und der Gesang ist auch relativ ehrgeizig, meint sie. Ihre Gesangsleistung findet sie selbst auch ein bisschen beeindruckend. Aber sie meinte, dass es gibt ein anderes Lied auf dem Album Even, das im Prinzip wie eine Art so Demo-Version klingt. Und es entstand nur mit einer Gitarre, die nur $50 gekostet hat. Und das Lied ist ihr auch genauso wichtig. Insofern sie... sie sieht es nicht so, dass Songs unterschiedlich wichtig sind, nur dass sie einfach unterschiedlich sind. Und sie hat ganz bewusst entschieden, interessante Arrangements für dieses Album zu nehmen. Auch viele Holzbläser-Arrangements sind dabei, Klarinette. Und sie meinte, dass ein Freund von ihr, Cameron Boucher, er ist ein Musiker natürlich, und also er ist mit ihr befreundet und er hat dann angeboten, für sie tatsächlich zu spielen auf diesem Album. Und sie hat sich mit Platten beschäftigt, mit Künstlern beschäftigt, die gerne orchestrale Arrangements mit einbauen, so wie Sufjan Stevens zum Beispiel. Und das ist so für sie ein Vorbild. Und sie dachte, das würde die Musik auch ganz spannend und interessant gestalten. Aber hören jetzt das Stück Appointments von dem Album Turn Out the Lights, jetzt von Julian Baker. So das war Appointments von dem Album Turn Out the Lights von Julian Baker. Und Julian ist bei mir immer noch im Studio. I was reading about your upbringing, because you come from Tennessee, don't you?
That's correct.
And you're actually from Memphis, but now you live in Nashville.
That's
is that
correct.
Right? Okay. And you had quite a strict religious upbringing. And Is that something which you think has had a lasting impact on what you do artistically?
I think so, in more than one way. Both just the technical musical sensibility that I have and also the worldview, I suppose, that I apply to my music and like all of the poetry or lyrics that I write is... It's mostly autobiographical. Growing up in a religious household, and I think for anyone that grew up religious, which is most everyone in the South, it embeds a deep sense of an awareness of what is, I guess, the idea of right and wrong, you know, gracious or merciful behavior or I guess... the opposite of that kind of behavior. It kind of brings those terms up very early in a child's life and gives them, maybe like presents them with those ideas so that the rest of your life you kind of view the world in those terms. Like when you think about your behavior or your place in the world, you think of it in the context of what is good and right for me to do. And for me, the ideals that ended up lasting were those of concern for your fellow human being. I think that religion, unfortunately, all too often gets employed and weaponized in culture to just be a platform for people to promote their own political ideologies. But and then I suppose, you know, even in the way that I play music and I think about melody and harmony is because I played music in the churches that I went to growing up. And... we were speaking earlier on this tour about how when you grow up playing in a band, you just show up on Sunday morning and they hand you a sheet of paper that says what songs you're going to play that day and you have to learn them immediately. And I mean, maybe that's not true for every place, but it was true where I went. And so it makes you able to sort of adapt to different musical situations. And it also gives you, I guess, a sense that the performance aspect of music is supposed to have a purpose where the performer exists as a conduit, you know, or it gives you a conceptualization of music as a collaborative experience, something that's supposed to be shared with the congregation and the people on the stage. And I think I still think of it like that, like trying to deflect attention away from my physical person and towards maybe the music or towards some other idea that's being shared or talked about, you know.
Okay, also sie ist nämlich sehr religiös erzogen worden und ich habe sie gefragt, ob das tatsächlich einen Einfluss jetzt auf ihre jetzige Musik gehabt hat und sie meinte auf jeden Fall, sie meinte, dass die ganze Sensibilität ihrer Musik und ihrer Weltanschauung ist von dieser religiösen Erziehung stark geprägt worden und ihre Songs sind komplett autobiografisch und sie denkt, dass diese Erziehung hat ihr auf jeden Fall eine sehr starke Moralvorstellung beigebracht. Also sehr viel darüber nachzudenken, was der Unterschied ist zwischen Gut und Böse. Und auch Begriffe wie Barmherzigkeit, Mitgefühl, solche Begriffe, die oft irgendwie nicht, also die nicht oft praktiziert werden in der Gesellschaft, die oft verdrängt werden von Menschen. Sie meinte, das ist ihr sehr, sehr wichtig, dass es beibehält. Und dass dieses Mitgefühl für ihre Mitmenschen, dass es auch in ihrer Musik tatsächlich vermittelt wird. Und sie sagt, dass Religion oft natürlich für verkehrte Zwecke verwendet wird, also eine Art Waffe, um politische Ideologien zu verbreiten. Und sie meinte, das ist also aus ihrer Sicht ein Denkfehler. Und sie glaubt, es soll wirklich viel mehr auf ganz normale zwischenmenschliche Ebene funktionieren. Und sie denkt auch, dass auch ihr Sinn für Melodie und Harmonie von dieser religiösen Erziehung geprägt worden ist, weil sie so viel Zeit in der Kindheit, in der Jugend, in der Kirche verbracht hat. Und sie hat auch live gespielt als Musikerin in der Kirche. Und sie meinte, sie musste immer ganz spontan reagieren. Sie kriegte dann irgendein Blatt, wo Songs drauf stand, wo religiöse Lieder drauf stand. Und sie musste sofort die Songs dann spielen können. Und es hat auch dazu geführt, dass sie flexibel geblieben ist, also kopfmäßig, also was die Musik betrifft, dass sie sehr flexibel und spontan sein kann, was ihre eigene Musikalität betrifft. Und sie meint, dass ganz wichtig ist die Beziehung zwischen der Gemeinde und eine Kirchenband, die da spielt, irgend so ein Kirchenchor oder eine Kirchengruppe, die da spielt. Es gibt natürlich eine enge spirituelle Beziehung dann zwischen der Gemeinde und den Musikern, die dann in der Kirche spielen. Und sie denkt, das ist auch wichtig, auch für ihre jetzige Musik, wo sie denkt, das soll auch ihre Rolle sein, wenn sie auf der Bühne steht, dass es tatsächlich diese enge Bindung entstehen sollte zwischen Publikum und Künstlerinnen. Das ist irgendwas, was sie also gerne anstrebt. So we're going to hear the title track now, Turn Out the Lights, and one of my favorite songs on the album. And it's, I was thinking, it's a song which could have got too melodramatic, but you managed to, in some way to save the day. You didn't go over the top. Is there any kind of like a danger in your mind that you could go over the top in terms of melodrama? Have you sensed that danger yet yourself?
I am so clumsy, I almost knocked this water off the table.
It's okay.
Yes, there are some songs on the record that I felt nervous about because I thought, is this song too, not produced, but, you know, I asked myself if in trying to construct a dynamic shift, if I made it too dramatic. But I think that I ended up just saying, well, maybe that is how the song is, you know? Like, there's an element of allowing the song to become what it is and not trying to force it to be something else, I suppose, even though that seems kind of... Maybe that doesn't make sense because the song is coming from me. I can decide what the song is. But say I write a song in its original form and it's very dramatic and the lyrics are dark and it has huge dynamic shifts and then I try to force it into a more, I guess, plain execution, I think, you know, maybe allowing the song to be what it is with all of its faults or maybe treading in extra dramatic water is okay. Because, say, for instance, a song like Claws in Your Back or Hurtless, I was worried, you know, it has these sweeping string arrangements and it has very intense climaxes. And I thought, you know, maybe this sounds a little bit cheesy. But when I remember the songs that made an impact on me when I was a kid, they were all from bands who really played with that elastic, tempo and intensity of songs. And I thought, you know, why not? Like, if I'm going to write a song that sounds like it could be a ballad, why not just go ahead and go all the way with the ballad? Like, if I'm going to do that, I might as well make it, you know, very dramatic. But with Turn Out the Lights, I think that one, to me, I didn't worry about. I worried about some other ones being too melodramatic, but Turn Out the Lights, I thought maybe that one is like the fun one, the raw one, where I just get to, or maybe not the fun one, but, you know, where I get to just kind of scream and really lay into the guitar. And that track actually has like multiple levels of distortion on it, you know, which doesn't occur in the rest of the record, but it felt very fun. Yeah.
Ja, wir hören gleich das Titelstück Turn Out the Lights. Und sie meinte, dass sie schon ein bisschen nervös war, was einige Songs betrifft, dass die vielleicht so melodramatisch werden könnten, überproduziert oder zu dynamisch. Und sie meint, dass gerade Songs wie Claws in Your Back und Hurtless, das waren so Beispiele, wo viele Streicherarrangements dabei sind und sie hat Angst gehabt, dass es vielleicht ein bisschen kitschig klingen könnte. Aber bei diesem Lied Turn on the Lights hat sie eigentlich nicht das Gefühl gehabt. Sie meinte, es war einfach so eine spaßige Nummer auf irgendeine Weise. Sie kommt dazu, am Schluss des Songs richtig loszuschreien und es gibt richtig verzerrte Gitarre dann drauf und es war schon eine spaßige Angelegenheit. Und schon intensiv, aber sie meinte, auch ihre Lieblingsbands in ihrer Kindheit, in ihrer Jugend waren auch immer so intensiv. Insofern, das ist auch so für sie das Vorbild. Ist jetzt Turn Out the Lights von Julian Baker, das Titelstück von dem neuen Album. So, das war das Titelstück Turn Out the Lights von Julian Baker von ihrem neuen Album. Does it actually make you feel less vulnerable when you get a bit more melodramatic or a bit more kind of bit more extrovert? Does it make any emotional difference in artistic terms in that respect?
I don't know. I tend to feel maybe not the opposite way. But I feel that the things that I, or perhaps the ideas that I convey at a louder volume or with more intensity behind them, seem like the things that are the most powerful portions, at least of the live set for me. They're the parts that carry the most emotional weight. You know, we were talking earlier about trying to reflect the content of the song with their performance. So when I think about a song like Turn Out the Lights or Claws in Your Back, where the things that are the thesis statements of the song are the things that get repeated and screamed and sung very loudly, or even a song like Rejoice, like recurring refrains are the things that I want to shout. And they come across that way because maybe sometimes there are thoughts in your head that seem very private and very timid, and you're afraid to let them out of yourself in the way that you can just whisper them, and that's about all you can do. And then there are some thoughts that occur to you that you feel like you wish that you could scream over and over again. And I have the luxury as a performer of when I have a thought that
being able to scream anytime you
makes
want.
Me want to scream, yeah. I can put those thoughts in a song and then I get to scream it on stage. And, you know, it's, you know, it happens on tour all the time. Some nights the emotion or the fear or turmoil that I'm singing about in a song like Turn Out the Lights, sometimes that's more present and more real than other nights. And but I get to play those songs in the set while I'm feeling them and kind of extort the emotion from myself. And it's almost more vulnerable because then at the times when those songs are real and they're an accurate depiction of what I'm feeling at that moment, you know, then the audience is watching me do what I have done since I was 12 years old in my garage, which is just having an emotion and screaming about it in order to work it out.
I think it's interesting because it's classic songwriting in a sense. So you are a singer-songwriter in the classic sense of the word. But I think there's a certain kind of a feel about it, a vibe about it, which almost sounds like a heavy rock band. Something, you know what I mean? In the sense that it's, although technically speaking, it's all kind of, you know, it's stripped back or whatever, but you could almost, I could, you know, if you said you're going to stop doing this and join a heavy rock band, I could almost understand you doing it. You know what I mean?
Oh, I would love to do that. That's what I grew up doing. Is I played in a band that was called the Star Killers and later called Forrester. We changed our name, but we were just a heavy rock band, and I would play these crazy guitar solos and because I had no nuance and I had to show everyone that I could play really fast solos for some reason because I was 13 or however old. And I released this record while I was still touring with that band, and I thought that, you know, we would tour and continue being a band, but then this record became successful and they were very supportive and they were like, go tour, do your thing, like, we support you. And they all joined other bands and still make music, but that's what I grew up doing and what I'm most comfortable, I suppose, in. And so maybe that sensibility that I learned from liking heavy music and music like, you know, earlier we were talking about Converge, like, that's the music I listen to day in and day out. And so,
all right,
yeah, maybe it's just reflected in how it...
Have you got a favorite Converge track?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so
maybe we could play it.
Do you mean maybe you could play it?
Yeah.
Okay, I love off that new record. I love the first song, A Single Tear, which is interesting because it's actually in this, it's just in a regular minor key. It's like, maybe there's like a couple of accidental diminished notes on it, but I thought it would be very interesting to try to rearrange it as like a finger-picked acoustic song and sing instead of scream it. But yeah, okay. I like a lot of their stuff. So anyway.
Ja, also Julie meint, dass wenn sie richtig losschreien darf bei Songs gerade live, in einer Live-Situation, dann hat sie immer das Gefühl im Nachhinein, dass gerade die Songs, die besonders dynamisch sind, ein besonderes emotionales Gewicht haben, mehr als die ganz ruhigen Songs. Und Turn Out the Lights, das wir gerade gehört haben, ist ein gutes Beispiel dafür. Aber es gibt andere Momente, wenn die Mitteilung, die sie machen will, einfach so privat und sie fühlt sich dann so schüchtern und introvertiert, dass es wirklich nur als ein Geflüster rüberkommen kann. Und es ist einfach immer unterschiedlich. Aber sie meint, dass letztendlich ist die Musik, die sie macht, die selbe Musik von Feeling her, als sie gemacht hat mit 12 Jahren in ihrer Garage, als sie angefangen hat. Es hat sie nicht wirklich viel geändert, was die Attitüde betrifft. Und sie hat tatsächlich früher in so einer richtigen Rockband, in so einer Heavy Rockband gespielt, The Starkillers. Und sie hätte mit der Band weitergemacht, wenn sie nicht als Solokünstlerin jetzt so erfolgreich gewesen wäre. Und sie meinte, dass eine ihrer Lieblingsbands hatte sie schon verhindert, sehr bevor wir angefangen haben, ist Converge. Und das hören sie im Bus oft, wenn sie unterwegs sind. Und wir hören jetzt nachher gleich ein Stück von dem neuen Converge-Album, A Single Tear. Und man ist vielleicht überrascht, wenn man weiß, dass sie solche Musik gerne hört. Aber letztendlich ist ihre Musik genauso intensiv und dynamisch wie richtige so Heavy-Rock-Gitarrenmusik eigentlich. Und nun hören wir die besagte Band Converge mit A Single Tear von dem Album The Dusk in Us. Das war A Single Tear von Converge von dem Album The Dusk in Us. Bei mir im Studio ist Julian Baker. So, we're running out of time gradually. I mean, there's so many things I still could have asked you about. I mean, I did actually read at some point that that you consider yourself to be, maybe you don't want to talk about it now, we can always edit this out, but a gay Christian. And that's something which people would regard as being unusual. Do you actually think that is something which has been relevant for your art? Or is that just your private life and has nothing to do with your art?
No, I mean, well, first of all, the fact that it's unusual, I think maybe it's perceived as unusual because there's a forced ultimatum in a culture that collapses traditional conservative ideology, political right-wing ideology, and Christianity and religious belief all into one archetype. And I think those are all three, or they should be, very different things. And but because they're all collapsed into one, there's this ultimatum imposed on people where they think that you can only be one or the other. But I find that since being more vocal about those things, you know, when I came out in high school, I think people just said, okay, you know, we accept the fact that you are a gay person and we don't have a problem with it. And we don't understand why it should be a problem that you are also a Christian. But for me, there was a lot of turmoil that I had to work out because I believed that these social norms reflected maybe the disapproval of the actual God that the social construct was attached to. And so it took a lot of discerning it and thinking about, you know, what do I actually believe about my relationship to faith? And it sort of incited a lot of growth. But I don't believe that it can be separated from my art, just as any of my political beliefs or any of my identity or my history can be separated from my art, because my art is drawn primarily from the personal. So, you know, to use the old adage, the personal is political. Like, there have to be both. And so I don't mind ever talking about it, but
It does actually sound devotional, I think, sometimes, some of the songs. I do actually get that impression.
Oh, well, I mean, see, that's good. And I think that's another, you know, as we were talking about before, with growing up with a religious background informing just my speech patterns, my thought patterns. It's not that I sit down and write songs where the lyrics say, I am gay and I am also Christian. Or, like, there are some people who have very direct and explicit deconstructions of social constructs in their songs. I mean, I listen to, you know, bands that just, with no real poetic aspect, discuss political situations and use words like Congress and presidency, and it's like on the nose. But that's not really my style. I just typically write about things that I'm experiencing and hope that those anecdotes can be situated in a socio-political context where they're relevant just as stories, you know?
Okay. Ja, ich meinte, dass sie sich in Amerika schon vor Jahren geoutet hat, als sogenannte Gay Christian, als eine homosexuelle Christin. Und ich habe sie gefragt, ob das wirklich einen wichtigen Einfluss auf ihre Arbeit gehabt hat, ob ihre Kunst davon beeinflusst worden ist, von ihrer Sexualität und von ihrem Glauben und diese Verbindung zwischen den beiden eben. Und sie meinte, auf jeden Fall, sie meinte, das kann man natürlich nicht trennen. Und natürlich, es ist ungewöhnlich, so ein Bekenntnis, aber sie meinte, es ist durchaus, man kann es durchaus so leben. Und sie meinte, dass sie sich sehr wohl fühlt mit so einer Aussage. Und sie meinte, das Problem ist, dass die Leute, dass viele Leute in Amerika, gerade in den Südstaaten, wo fast alle Menschen religiös sind, dass sie denken, dass es nicht möglich ist, schwul zu sein und auch christlich zu sein. Und sie meinte, man kann sehr wohl das eine mit dem anderen verbinden. Und sie denkt, dass sie sehr modern ist in der Hinsicht und sie steht dazu, dass sie natürlich dann richtige, das Gefühl hat, richtige Fortschritte zu machen in der Gesellschaft mit so einer Aussage. Und es hat auf jeden Fall Einfluss auf ihre Musik. Und das ganze Feeling auch der Songs hat eine gewisse Gläubigkeit und also eine intensive Religiosität. Right, well, that's all the time we've got. We haven't got any more time now. We've run out of time now. So thanks very much for talking to me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
It was good to talk to you.
For the great conversation.
And to finish off, I'd like to play Claws in Your Back, if that's okay.
That's perfectly
Which doesn't sound cheesy at all, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. Jetzt zum Schluss haben wir jetzt Claws in Your Back, a phonem album. Turn Out the Lights von Julian Baker. Und das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.